Every 10 seconds, a new small business is started. Every day, more and more people are deciding they want to be their own boss and making huge sacrifices to live out their dreams. Yet, they have no place to turn for support. Entrepreneurs of the world, unite and let's talk business.
This is Dr. Dennis Waitley. You're listening to Let's Talk Business, which I think is probably the most important show that you can listen to on becoming an entrepreneur in a fast-forward world.
The Let's Talk Business Network is dedicated to helping entrepreneurs and small business owners succeed. So get ready to be helped, informed, and inspired, because it's time for Let's Talk Business with veteran entrepreneur and a man who was voted one of the 100 most important talk show hosts, Mitch Schlimmer.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Business. I'm your host, Mitch Schlimmer, and if you've never heard this show, boy, you're in for a treat, as Let's Talk Business is all about entrepreneurship and innovation and youth empowerment, and we have some of the greatest entrepreneurs of all time come on this show each and every week, and that holds true today. We've got two great entrepreneurs, one joining us all the way from California in Mark Moses, and we're going to talk to Mark about his journey and all the things that he has done and he is doing. And then at the half hour, we're going to talk to Sanjay Parekh, and we're going to talk about his journey, about his Atlanta company here, Startup Riot, and much, much more. Get that pad and pen ready, as you're going to get a lot of great advice. And I am dedicating today's show to thinking, acting, and dreaming big. And both my guests understand thinking and acting big. As I mentioned, my first guest is Mark Moses, and I'm so thrilled to have him on. A friend of mine, Jack Daly, was helped me get in touch with Mark, and Mark actually is the real deal, the real entrepreneur. Currently, he coaches 26 of North America's top business leaders. He grows entrepreneurs and CEOs and so much more, and he also really focuses on how to dramatically grow their businesses, their people, and elevating their own performance. Matter of fact, Mark is one of those typical entrepreneurs, those serial entrepreneurs. He started his first company at age 19, and he successfully built and sold two companies during his journey. He's won the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award and so many other awards, including the Blue Chip Enterprise Award for overcoming adversity. It's hard to believe all the things that Mark has done, and a lot more to go. Matter of fact, his last company was ranked the number one fastest growing company in Los Angeles as well, and number 10 on the Inc. 500. He has done some things athletically, it's hard to believe, but this is a guy who's really, really driven. He's done a 9 full-distance Ironman triathlons, the Hawaiian Ironman World Championship 3 times. And matter of fact, in 1992, he actually won the U.S. National Squash Championship. I'm so thrilled to have Mark Moses joining us today. Mark, welcome to Let's Talk Business.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, buddy. How are you?
I'm terrific this morning.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. We've got a whole half hour here. As I mentioned, Mark, the show is all about entrepreneurship. And if anyone knows that beast, it's you. And I thought one of the things that I like to do in starting out the show is to get a feel for you and your journey. It really helps our listeners. And then we get into what I call the meat of the interview. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Mark Moses and your journey as an entrepreneur?
Well, it started when I was in high school. My dad had a clothing business and went bankrupt in my last year of high school. I needed to make more money. My cushy lifeguard job wasn't going to get it done, so I wanted to go to college. I went my first year of college. I saw this sign in the Career Center that said, "Be your own boss, have your own business." It was part of a franchise program called Student Painters. I said, okay, I'll give that a try. And my first summer, we did $70,000 worth of business, and I made $18,000. I thought that was pretty cool. It only cost me $4,500 a year to go to college back in Canada in 1985. Thought that was a pretty neat experience. I decided to do it again my next summer and made $35,000. Thought that that was really cool. And originally I thought I was going to college to become an accountant. Thought, I don't think so anymore. I can always hire an accountant. And so I decided to pursue my career as an entrepreneur. I packed up my U-Haul, drove from the Toronto area south to Amarillo, Texas, turned right, and eventually ran into California and got to California and started the student painter company out here. We grew it in 4 years from zero to 250 branches run by college students. We had a total of 3,000 student employees in the company. And then I sold it when I was 26. That was my first journey as an entrepreneur. And then I got into, during that time, I got a mortgage. So I felt qualified to be a mortgage guy. And myself and the guy that did the actual mortgage on my home became business partners. And we set up the mortgage company. And that's the mortgage company where I eventually met Jack Daly, who ended up joining us a few years later as our COO, Chief Opportunity Officer, then became a partner in the company. And we grew that thing to $1.6 billion in annual volume over the 13-year period, 65 offices around the U.S. and 550 people. Or it's just a little journey.
Just a little bit of a journey, Mark. And I have to tell you, boy, I really admire the what I call the real entrepreneur. And it brings up an interesting question. As you and I know, many times people go into business and they're labeled an entrepreneur. And I was curious, you know, based on your journey and what you see, you know, to you, what is an entrepreneur? And do you think they're born or made?
That's a good question. What is an entrepreneur? An entrepreneur is someone that is has a vision and is out there pursuing their vision, and they're really passionate about what they do.
Born or made, Mark?
Are they born or are they made? That's a good question. I don't know that I know the answer to it.
Well, it's an interesting subject, and I really appreciate your candor. I know that as I opened up, you coach a lot of entrepreneurs today, and many of them are real leaders. And I have to tell you, based on my 30-something years as an entrepreneur, some people believe that they are really born, and little by little, with all the schools teaching entrepreneurship, and you can get degrees in entrepreneurship, they believe that they can be made, and you know, maybe it's a little bit in between, but I have found that some of the great ones, and I've had them on the show, and I've got to know them, many of them is in their DNA. And one thing I thought would be great for you to also talk about, and that is growth. That last company you talked about, you know, you have an idea, and before you know it, with time and a lot of work, 500-plus employees, over $1 billion in sales, and obviously that did not happen by luck. So maybe you could talk about the things that you did, the plans or the goals that really relate around, you know, thinking and acting big.
Well, there's a variety of different stages. One of the experiences I had, my partner Brett and I were running our offices in Los Angeles, and this guy who ended up becoming the best man in my wedding needed a job, and we funded an operation for him in Orange County, California, and he did a great job. He grew it really quickly. As a matter of fact, within 9 months, that division was making $200,000 in net income per month. So we were very excited. And one day, I remember it in October of 1996, he actually left and took most of the company with him. And most of the division with him. And because we only spent one day a week in there, we didn't really know the people, and they all were revolved around him. So he set up this competing company just down the street, two blocks away, and we had just signed a lease to move into a 25,000 square foot building. I had set up 160 cubes, and we only had 12 of us when we actually moved into this space. So you asked about thinking big. And I said to my assistant at the time, look, I'd like you to find me a marching band. USC would be great. And I'd like you to find me an elephant, tear a wall down in our building, and I'd like to ride the elephant into the annual meeting. The message was that if you think big and act big, you will be big. Let's go do $1 billion. So that was our thinking bigness, I guess, at the time. And it was an amazing experience because the employees the very next day came to work, and even though some of them had been laughing, crying, and all that stuff, they brought little stuffed elephants in and crystal elephants and ceramic elephants, and they started putting those elephants on their desk and saying, hey, pal, you may be nuts, but I'm with you. Let's go make that thing happen.
Well, I tell you what, listeners, if you go to Mark's website, www.markmoses, that's M-O-S-E-S, .net, you will see a video there, and you'll see him on that elephant. And, Mark, one of the things that I think would be invaluable to our listeners, and our listeners are entrepreneurs, CEOs, and even would-be entrepreneurs, and that is maybe you could talk about some of the specific things that you did in order to build this billion-dollar company. In other words, not just the belief, but the certain actions, the certain processes, principles, whatever, that led to this. And if you could share that, that would be invaluable.
Sure. I had this really, really terrific business coach over the years. He coached me for 10 years during my time at Platinum. And he suggested to me that there were five things that if I focused on just five, I could dramatically grow my business. I said, man, I'm a good student. Five's not a big list. Tell me what it is. I'll do it. He said, Mark, number one is you need to focus on the vision and direction of the company. You as the CEO, the entrepreneur, the leader, need to set the vision, set the course. Where are we going and how are we going to get there? Number two is you are the ultimate responsibility for cash. You got to watch the cash. Even though you might have finance people and accounting people and a CFO and all that stuff, at the end of the day, you are the one that will suffer if you run out of cash. Your CFO can leave. Your accounting people can leave. So at the end of the day, you got to be watching the cash. Number three is you got to have the right people in the right jobs. I learned along the way that as the company began to grow and grow and grow, I needed to continue upgrading the talent in our organization and bringing people on that were better than me. Number four was key relationships inside the company and outside the company. For example, I ask CEOs and entrepreneurs all the time, what are the top five relationships, the most important relationships to the company, that if they were to leave the firm, you're in deep trouble? And people would say, well, if I lost my bank line, that would be really bad. Or if I lost a key vendor or supplier relationship, that'll be bad. If I lost one or two, three of my key, most important, high-margin customers, that would be really bad. Or if I lost a key employee in the company, that was very integral to where our business was headed, or they were running a division or in a key role, that would be very bad. So the CEO's job is to be responsible to ensure and that we don't lose those relationships and ultimately own them. They're the ones that own those key relationships. And point number five is a process to continue to learn. As a CEO, I always kid around that we're not yet competent, and we should continue to learn, whether it's through industry conferences, whether it's participating in groups like EO, YPO, Vistage, Tech, or other forums, industry forums, where we can continue to learn, whether it's visiting and learning from your competition. Maybe there's competitors of yours that are around the country, going in and visiting with them and sharing ideas as to what's working in their markets and learning from them as well. So those are the five things. I found when I focused on those five, I could materially, as a Canadian we would say, move the puck down the ice.
Well, I think to a large extent also, Mark, that you clearly saw where the puck was going to be before the puck got there. And I also think that is a trait, sometimes they call it vision, that really good entrepreneurs have. But I think those five tips are extremely, extremely valuable. And again, listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to 91.1 FM right here, WREK, 100,000 watts. You're listening to Let's Talk Business. I'm your host, Mitch Schlimmer, and we're talking to entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, Mark Moses, all the way from California. As I mentioned, you can also learn more about him and what he does at www.markmoses.net. One of the things, too, Mark, that in doing my homework and trying to get a sense for you is that obviously, you know, that process of goal setting and measuring and all that is extremely important. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that and how you use that, including planning, because as I expressed a little bit earlier, doing over $1 billion in sales was not luck.
Well, let me share with you a little bit about my methodology, my belief system, and it's going to sound anal retentive to you, but let me just share it with you. It's what I use in my coaching practice that has enabled us to achieve 182% growth in revenue across my clients over a two-year period. So it's really figuring out where it is you would like to be 3 years from now. So, for example, what are the revenues and what are the profits 3 years from now? The second thing is, what will it take? What are the three or four measurable things that it will take to guarantee we get that done? Now, I didn't say hope. I didn't say wish. I said, what are the three or four things that it will take to guarantee we get that done? What will stand in the way of making it happen? A lot of folks at the end of a period would say, well, these are all the reasons why I didn't hit plan. So, 3 years, where do I want to be? What's it going to take to guarantee I get it done? And what's going to stand in the way? And I like to reel it in a little bit tighter. If I want to be here in 3 years, where do I want to be 1 year from now? So let's just take 2012, for example. Let's just say I want revenues to be $10 million and I want my profits to be $1.5 million. What three or four things, measurable, specific, will it take to guarantee I get that done? For example, let's just say I want to grow sales by $5 million. And each sales guy that I have does about $1 million a piece. So I need to hire five sales guys that can each do $1 million a piece. But a couple of those guys won't make it just because, and I might lose one of the ones that I have, so I might need to hire eight people that I believe that can do $1 million in sales, at least, to ensure or guarantee that I end up with a net of five. Then I ask myself what's going to stand in the way of making that happen. Again, these are they might be the excuses, they might be the real deal, it might be people sometimes say, well, cash to pay for them, I can't find these people, like whatever they are, whatever the story is. And then the final question is, what can I do to overcome what's standing in my way? So here are all the excuses. Now here's how we're going to overcome all of those so when the end of the year comes, these are not an issue. We've already discussed how we're going to overcome all this baggage that we have. Once we've agreed on where we want to be and what's going to take and all that stuff at the end of 1 year, I like to reel it back even further. Where do I want to be by the end of Q1, by the end of the first quarter? You'll never guess what the next questions are. What will it take to guarantee that I get it done? What's going to stand in the way? And how can I overcome what stands in the way? And then we create initiatives under each one of the drivers, the guaranteed items. What are the two, three, four, five initiatives that we're going to pursue to guarantee each one of those drivers get done? What's going to stand in the way? How we can overcome what's standing in the way, who owns it, and when will it be done by. Follow that methodology, you can then achieve the goals that you've set for yourself. Again, it sounds anal retentive, yet it enables entrepreneurs and CEOs to gain tremendous clarity because too many people just show up to work every day and just do. They show up and they react to whatever it is that happens every day. For example, they come in after freshening up their cup of coffee, they sit down, they turn on their computer, and they start checking email. Well, how long do they check email? 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 1 hour, 2 hours. For some, it's all day. As stuff comes in, and because they want to be type A diligent, get back to everybody that's responded, they end up getting distracted by stuff that's completely unimportant that ends up consuming most of their morning. Then the lineup begins at the door, people asking them questions of where, what we need to do, or this issue or that issue. Now it's lunchtime. They go to lunch, they come back after lunch, check a little bit more email, a few more questions, a few more lineups at the door. Before they know it, it's 4 o'clock and they're on their way home and, oh my God, I didn't work on the three or four items that I needed to work on today that were the most important in me driving my business this quarter, so I'll come back in tomorrow and do it then. They arrive tomorrow and the process repeats itself and they never find themselves focused on the drivers they're going to ensure that they hit their goals for that quarter or that year.
Some great advice, Mark. And as I like to say to people all the time, you know, as simple as this also sounds, focus on the 20% that really matters. And as you said, there's so many distractions, more now than ever, between BlackBerries, iPhones, Internet, Twitter, this, that. And sometimes you got to get back to the basics. And one thing I wanted to ask you, and that is, as you and I know, and you told us this story, and during the journey, we all face certain obstacles and adversity. And many times it turns out for the best, but when you're in the middle of this storm, it doesn't feel that way. Maybe you could talk a little bit about not only failure, but more importantly, how to overcome obstacles.
Well, I think it would be helpful if I just gave you a few examples of some of the challenges that I had. One of the big ones was the best man at my wedding leaving, like I shared with you a few moments ago, leaving abruptly, setting up a competing firm. About 7 or 8 months later, we had a corporate fire, and the city inspector says it was going to be 60 days before we can get back into our building. Well, that was a bit problematic with 150 people in our center at that time. Then Wall Street collapsed in 1998. We had 275 people in our sales center, and I had to lay 240 of them off over the weekend. It was at a time in October 1998 when Wall Street had pulled out of our business. And then a few years later, we had our bankruptcy schedules filled out because we just completely ran out of money. From making $1 million in net income a month, we started losing $1 million in net income, and it was just we lost everything that we had. Bankruptcy schedules filled out until an angel investor fell out of the sky, wrote us a check, and we were able to fight another day. A few years later, my 3-year-old son had a brain tumor and 2 emergency brain surgeries, and if some of that other stuff couldn't take you right out of your game, well, that sure could. So those are some examples of what I experienced. Now, what did I learn from dealing with those and how to get through some of that stuff? Well, one of them is keep a good attitude. And because if you don't, if your attitude goes south, the confidence that you're giving your organization is real poor, you'll send those people into panic. I like to drink red wine. I like my glass half full rather than half empty. Never give up. No matter how tough it is, believe in your vision and don't give up. And I think of Carrie Strug, the young gymnast, the Olympian, that had either broken or sprained her ankle and ran down that final event, the vault, landed on one foot and won the gold for Team USA. It would have been really easy to say, hey, look, I broke or sprained my ankle, I can't do this, but she stepped up and did what she had to win. So I think it's mostly attitudinal. And get back to figuring out what is my vision, where is it that I want to go, how am I going to get there, how am I going to overcome the obstacles that I'm dealing with, who do I need to help me make that happen, and get to it. And the other thing that I learned during chaotic and adverse times, is communicate regularly with the company. We went to a point where we were communicating every single day. We would get the company together for just a few minutes during some very chaotic and turbulent times to share with them what's actually happening, such they don't go into panic or create their own rumors that become their own reality. I also learned when things were turbulent and uncertain that if I needed to cut in the organization, to cut early and cut deep. I could always hire people back if I had to. Those are a few tidbits. I hope they're helpful.
It's all been helpful, Mark. And as I alluded to earlier when we started here, you are the real deal. You didn't pick this up in a book or in a course. You've done it a long, long time, and you've been through the ups and the downs, and obviously you're out there today helping a lot of people, doing a lot of speaking, and a lot more. And I think in starting to wrap up, I thought what would be really interesting is maybe you could talk a little bit about what I might call, you know, those skills or those mindsets that you translate, you know, from being an athlete to business. In other words, doing a triathlon is not easy. Forget about 9 of them. Forget about Hawaii. And, you know, you've done it. And that mindset is really critical. And maybe you could talk a little bit about what it takes to get through one of those and how it helps you in business.
It's really funny that you're mentioning that topic. I produce a newsletter or my e-news once a month, and the one that's actually going out today is called Ironman Lessons for Business Success. So I'll share just a brief story with you before we run out of time. I knew that I did this recent Ironman in Arizona, November 20th, and my goal was to go sub 11 hours. So in the world of Ironman, that's pretty awesome time. And my best ever had been 11:39, so I could visualize, my vision in my head was 10:59:59. And I knew that if I could achieve that, I could ultimately possibly win my division. So I had a vision for it. Secondly, I built my plan from back to front. What's it going to take for me to ultimately achieve that? I had a checklist that I followed throughout the day. First of all, the checklist in the morning and all the things I needed to do. And then throughout the day, I had this checklist in my mind that I followed all day. I could have gone harder at times, but I knew I would burn out later. I stayed focused on my plan and executed it with relentless focus and discipline. I drank when I didn't feel like I wanted to drink. I ate when I wasn't hungry. I took my salt tablets when I wasn't sweating that much. I measured everything throughout the day and ultimately ended up finishing the race in 10:56 and won the thing by 6 minutes.
Just incredible.
I made up a big deficit during that time, but it was, I could have gone harder to chase my competitors, but I might have crashed and burned like they did and not being able to execute my plan.
Well, I tell you what, Mark, one of the things that you said to me was, isn't it funny that you bring that up today? And what you probably don't know is that I am a fellow athlete, and I clearly understand those skills and how you transform them, and I have no doubt how you've used them. And matter of fact, we actually have a foundation that empowers our youth to live their dreams. It's called the Magic Wand Foundation, and on our board is none other than Scott Rigsby. And Scott has gotten, obviously, a lot of coverage based on, obviously, him and his journey. And I tell you what, I really enjoy always watching that. And I always admire, you know, the things that you guys are able to do. And as I say many times here, Mark, I never know where the time goes here. It always goes so fast. I just love meeting and getting to know such wonderful entrepreneurs like yourself. Again, listeners, go to www.markmoses.net. That's www.markmoses.net. You might want to book him for an upcoming conference, speaking. I have no doubt that he will help change you and your life. and your business as well, because he knows what he's doing. He's done it. And as you heard today, he's not afraid to share. And one of the things you don't also know, Mark, is I coined the term a long time ago called OPE. We all know about OPM, other people's money. And I was talking about other people's experiences. And that is at the forefront of why we do the show, is to share your journey and let our listeners learn from you. So hopefully you enjoyed yourself today.
You do a great thing. Congratulations for what you're doing for entrepreneurs. You are making a difference. Congratulations.
Well, Mark, I really appreciate it, and I'll be in touch with you, buddy, and I look forward to getting to know you as well.
It was a pleasure chatting with you today.
Okay. Again, listeners, go to www.markmoses.net. He is really a marvelous, marvelous entrepreneur, as I obviously alluded to. Again, you're listening to Let's Talk Business right here on WREK 91.1 on your FM dial. As I like to say, 100,000 watts. And I always love my featured guests. And my second featured guest actually is joining us here from Atlanta. And it is none other than Sanjay Parekh. And if you want to know about him, first of all, he actually graduated from Georgia Tech. And has done some amazing things. Today he's the founder of Startup Riot, which is a day-long conference and career fair event held in multiple cities. And he's also a co-founding partner of Shot Put Ventures, which is actually a seed stage investment firm. He's done a lot of things, including he was the founder of Digital Envoy and many, many other things. We could list them all out here, but the fact of the matter is he's also the real deal. He's got a lot of patents, and he loves to help entrepreneurs. Sanjay, welcome to Let's Talk Business.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Good. Hopefully you're enjoying yourself, and we've got a whole half hour here, and I'm looking forward to learning from you, and I know my listeners are as well. I know that, you know, as we both know, you got your electrical engineering degree from Georgia Tech here, and which is a marvelous, marvelous school, and then you went on to get your MBA from Emory University, the Gazzetta Business School. So why don't you talk a little bit about, and as I'd like to start off with my guests, about you and your journey. I always find it fascinating, you know, from a kid on, how you get where you get. So let's start off and talk a little bit about your journey and how it led you to Startup Riot.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny. So, you know, if you think about, for me, my journey started actually when I was a kid. And so, you know, my first entrepreneurial experience was doing, and I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day in comic books, they used to have this paper that said, you know, hey, kids, you know, do you want to make money or something like that? They didn't really tell you what you were going to do. But I filled out that form and sent it in and discovered that I had just signed up to become a door-to-door salesperson for custom imprinted holiday cards. So that was actually my first gig, selling door-to-door, door-to-door sales of holiday cards. And I tell you what, it's a shame, actually, that door-to-door sales isn't kind of as safe of a thing to do now, but I learned so much about selling during that experience. So I had probably about 400 to 500 houses that I sold to made money doing these holiday cards. And so I had to deal with the whole process of getting orders and getting people to sign up and pay money to a kid, and they weren't sure, you know, if they were actually going to get product at the end of it. And then, you know, a couple of months later, you know, organize all the products that I got back in the mail and deliver them and everything. So that was kind of my first entrepreneurial experience. And then, you know, kind of later on down the line, after getting out of Georgia Tech in 96, I went to work for an early stage company. It was a joint venture, so it wasn't venture funded or anything, but I was about employee number 20 there. And then traveled around quite a bit. And the company's still around. They're a public company now. It's called Aeris up in Suwanee, Georgia. And so spent some time there. And that's during my time there, that's when I came up with the idea to start up Digital Envoy and do IP-based location. And so that was in March 99, when I came up with that idea. And I went full-time in 2000. And so during the next few years for that, ended up raising about $12 million in venture capital and angel money for the company. I left in 05 to take a break from working, and that's when I did my MBA over at Emory, and then stayed on the board until we exited, which was in 2007. And then that led into, in 2008, to start up Startup Riot, as a way of giving back and helping out other entrepreneurs. And so, you know, next month will be 5 years for that event here in Atlanta. Last year we branched out the event, and we now do the day-long event in Seattle as well. And then this year last year we started up a career fair event to go along with the main event. But this year we expanded that event to be in D.C. as well, Washington, D.C., and we're looking to expand that to other cities on top of that. So that's basically what's been going on. You know, a lot of other side things, as you mentioned, you know, like Shotput Ventures, which is an early seed stage investment fund here in Atlanta. And now we're actually a part of Flashpoint Ventures, which is at Georgia Tech, that just recently graduated their first, 16 startups out of that incubator, and they'll do another class of startups this summer.
Well, I tell you, there's really some great stuff going on here at Georgia Tech, as you and I know, and all the things going on at the ATDC, and we could do a whole show on that, and maybe we will do that. But, you know, one of the things that I was talking earlier with my first featured guest, Mark Moses, and, you know, you are the Beast, and you know the Beast well, and you work with them, and that is the entrepreneur. And I'm curious, you know, from your take on things, you know, what do you think an entrepreneur is, and do you think they're born or made?
That's a good question. I know Mark didn't have a definite answer to that either. You know, I think you can be either, actually. I think a lot of entrepreneurs are made, or rather born, but a lot of entrepreneurs are made. And either way, I think once you get the bug, that's it. You're set, right? You can't, you're kind of spoiled for life at that point. You can't go back to working for other people. Clearly, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs that I know and you know do work for other people, you know, when their businesses are acquired. But those things aren't lifelong, it seems like. I mean, time and time again, I've seen it where that'll happen and they'll get the itch after a few years and they just got to leave and do their own thing. So I don't know that it's definitely one or the other. I think there's a lot of things that kind of revolve around that mindset. Like for me, I think maybe I was more born an entrepreneur because I started so early. But there's definitely a lot of folks that come later in life, and I think those are made.
Well, I tell you, it's an interesting time to be an entrepreneur. And if there's anyone out there that really knows the journey, especially of the startup, it's you. And my listeners are from all over. Many are seasoned entrepreneurs and CEOs, and many are would-be entrepreneurs, and especially our youth. And, you know, maybe you could take us through here, Sanjay, the startup itself. You know, what it's really, really like. Not what you read in a book, but what it's really like.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, it's funny because I guess in the books and in the movies, you see like one of the two ends of the spectrum, right? You see the ridiculously awesome, you know, very hyper-successful startup, or you see the startup where the founder just made so many stupid mistakes and it was a spectacular failure. But I think those are the edge cases, really. I think the reality is somewhere in the middle. And honestly, there's just so many highs and so many lows to it that it's not like a normal thing to subject yourself to. You know, I think as entrepreneurs, we're just a little off kilter from everybody else to be, you know, masochistic enough to expose ourselves to this kind of swings in kind of happiness and sadness almost on a day-to-day basis. So that is, I think, the thing that you never read about or you never see because, you know, people don't really care about kind of the day-to-day stuff. They care about, you know, reveling in the massive success or the spectacular failure.
One of the things that you've brought up here in your own way, and that is they also don't really know many times, as we both know, the isolation and loneliness that accompanies the entrepreneurial journey. And Mark Moses was talking about EO and Vistage and no shortage of groups out there to join. But maybe you could talk a little bit about Lunch Chaos and excuse me. Maybe talk a little bit about Lunch Chaos.
The Lunch Chaos that we do at Startup Riot?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, we do some things that are a little bit different with Startup Riot because, you know, our kind of main driving purpose with that event is not to maximize profit. You know, the reason I started that event was actually to give back and help out others. So we started looking at kind of the makeup of a conference and what really does make sense and doesn't make sense. And, you know, if you look at most conferences, they charge hundreds of dollars to attend. If not, you know, some of them are $1,000 plus. And that just never made sense to me, right? So we try to keep our costs low. So, you know, for presenters, obviously, we're free because pay-to-pitch is just kind of pure evil. And everybody else is $30 to $70 is the price right now going. You know, it might go up in the future a little bit, but I can't see it going up dramatically. So with that, you know, one of the things that sticks out that you end up paying for with those tickets is the food, right? And you think about having to serve food for, you know, we're going to be north of 500 attendees next month. And so 500 meals all at the same time. You know, that adage of good, fast, or cheap, you know, pick two. And so inevitably what you get is you get fast food that's expensive and nobody enjoys it. It's just kind of crappy. So what we do is a very chaotic kind of matching exercise where people go to lunch with people they don't know, and they go to local restaurants. And so in that way, we're supporting the entrepreneurs that are doing those things locally, that are running restaurants. You know, we bring in Atlanta, we started getting all these food trucks, so we bring those into. And, you know, the main point being is that the attendees can then decide if they want to spend a couple of bucks on lunch or if they want to spend $100 on lunch. I don't have to be the one deciding that, and they can decide the quality of the meal and the expense of the meal on their own.
Well, I tell you, it's some really innovative thinking, and I really admire the fact that, you know, you are giving back and allows you to see a lot of deals, as we both know, and it's good for deal flow, and hopefully you'll help some, and you'll eventually, you know, maybe make a buck two or there, and that's okay as well, as that's kind of how the process works. But I also thought, and I mentioned earlier today, that today's show is all about thinking, acting, and dreaming big. And as you mentioned early on, you know, a company you work for, over $1 billion in sales that you did, and so on and so forth. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, thinking and acting and dreaming big, and how to really do something that matters.
Sorry, I missed that last part there.
Yeah, what I was asking you was today I dedicated our entire show to thinking, acting, and dreaming big. And as you talked about early on, you know, you worked for that company and, you know, a lot of sales there, you know, billion plus. And I was curious, you know, maybe you could share from us, from all you've seen and you've experienced, how to think and act and dream big.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's been just being open to the possibility, right? I mean, the idea for Digital Envoy came when I hit two websites, the FedEx and IKEA website, and the first thing they ask you, and actually I think to this day they ask you, is what country are you in? And that's before they show you any content. Now, if you're not kind of thinking about, you know, why is that, and why is that, you know, why are they doing this, I totally would have missed that opportunity. And so I think everybody has it in them to discover these things, because every day that we walk around, right, there are things that annoy each one of us. There are things that we, each of us, think, at least for a second, man, that should be better. And that could be, you know, as simple as, you know, interacting with kind of day-to-day things in the store or on the street, or something that you see online. You know, why is it the way that it is? Why is it not better? How can we do this better? And that's, I think, when you get that opportunity to think big and dream big. And I'll tell you honestly, you know, working up to the idea that ended up being Digital Envoy, there were multiple ideas before then that I thought about that I wanted to work on. And you go down the path a little bit and you're like, yeah, this is just not going to do it, right? This is just, it's not that interesting of a problem. Nobody else cares. It's just not a big enough marketplace. You know, or maybe I'm the only one that cares. This problem doesn't bother anybody else. But, you know, I think if you do it enough times, you eventually come to the point where you do find that problem that needs to be solved, that everybody else is having that same problem, but nobody is willing to actually solve the problem. And so, you know, somebody's got to do it, and why not you?
I think it's some great advice. And matter of fact, one of the things that you know that you said is you know, it really falls in that simple bucket of find the need and fill it. And as you said, find the big enough need and the rest can be history. But as we both know, the journey can be challenging. And I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, as you said, you took a break, you know, and maybe, and I know you speak about this, maybe talk a little bit about success through failure.
Yeah, I mean, well, I, honestly, failure is probably the biggest way of learning. Because the problem is with a lot of people, and I won't just say entrepreneurs, but just people in general, is that when you do succeed, you know, as people, we have this tendency to think, well, you know, that was because I'm so smart, right? I'm successful because I'm just the best. And I think in most cases, that's probably not true, right? There's a lot of luck involved in succeeding. And so a lot of times that failure, if you're willing to kind of accept the failure and not blame failure on others and look at it critically and say, you know, why did I fail? I think it ends up teaching you a lot. And sometimes you're right. You know, I think sometimes you need to take a break from stuff. If you're so focused on something, it's hard to see the forest for the trees because you've got that kind of tunnel vision and you can't see the issues that you're facing. And sometimes when you do take that step back, you can come up with a more elegant solution or a bigger problem to attack that solves the issues that you're having as well as other issues that other folks are having.
Again, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening right here on 91.1 on your FM dial. And we're talking with Sanjay Parekh and all the way here in beautiful Atlanta where he attended Georgia Tech. And he's really built not only some nice businesses, but more importantly, he's helping a lot of entrepreneurs with his latest venture, Startup Riot. Go to his website as well. www.startupriot.com. And I know that, and as we both know, and you mentioned it earlier, is raising money for your business. And, you know, we'll call it, you know, pitching 200 VCs in 10 months until you close around. Maybe you could talk a little bit about not only that experience for you, Sanjay, but more importantly, some of the keys to actually getting investors to fund in your dream.
Yeah, so so the time that I did that raise was an interesting time. So it was during the first bubble days, dot-com bubble days, and it was painful, honestly, you know. So, you know, we came to a point in time where we had term sheets and signed one, and that one got pulled because the funder didn't have money to actually execute the term sheet, and so we had to start all over again. I mean, raising money is a marathon process, and it's a lot about relationships. And I'm happy to say that a lot of the people that I pitched to, you know, some of those 200, I still talk to this day. And, you know, I've been leveraging those relationships for Startup Riot now in that the prize packages that we put together for the winners involves a lot of the folks that I pitched to many, many years ago. Last year, we're working on this year's prize packages because the event's coming up next month. But last year, we had 17 30-minute meetings guaranteed for the top winner of the Atlanta event. So 8.5 hours of meetings. So you're a starting entrepreneur, and you don't have those contacts. This is, I mean, such a fabulous way to get those relationships started. And obviously, you're not going to raise money on that first call, that first 30-minute call. But that first conversation is kind of that important first step to start going down that path. And the reason I did that is because, honestly, there was nothing like that for me when I started. And so, you know, my philosophy with Startup Riot has always been, you know, let me look at the things that weren't around for me and see how I can fix them. And fundraising is kind of a necessary part of that. Now, a lot of people bootstrap, and more power to them. If you can bootstrap it, I think, you know, the less time you can spend pitching and trying to raise money, the better. Because honestly, it's not a value add to your business. You're just kind of moving around dollars from an investor's pocket into your pocket, but it doesn't actually create value in your business. You know, working on your business is what creates value. And that's why, you know, thinking about that 10 months and 200 VCs, I talk about that story a lot because I think you need to be really certain that you want to raise money and that you're ready to raise money because it can take a long time. And that time that I spent raising that money with the other co-founders, you know, means that those 10 months, we didn't really build on our business as quickly as we could have. In the end, it was great for us because we closed our round in July 2001, And then a few months later, 9/11 happened, and you know, nobody got funded for probably the better part of a year here in Atlanta. And so that money really helped us kind of go through that recession and be able to survive through all that. And so had we raised less or had we not raised money, it would have been a lot more difficult.
Well, one thing I thought, and again, you know, you did it, and you see it every day. Maybe just give us, you know, a few tips on how to successfully pitch investors. They're very busy. Give us some tips that you say, God, I wish I knew this before.
Yeah. You know, I think it's, you got to kind of drive to the point. You know, entrepreneurs, especially engineers, and I say this as an engineer, you want to discuss like every bell and whistle on the thing that you're developing. And honestly, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, especially in the first meeting, right? The entrepreneurs and engineers have this, like, I don't know, innate thing of where we want to talk about and explain everything, all this minutia. And I think it's because we love technology and we love those gadgets. And we feel like, you know, if I love it, then they should love it. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, you got to really understand your audience. And the point of having that first conversation is not about selling them and getting them to write a check, because they're not going to. The point of that first conversation is to get a second conversation. And so if you can interest them enough to get to them to that point to say, you know, a week later or a couple of weeks later, hey, yeah, let's talk again because this is interesting and we want to follow up, you were successful then in that first meeting. But if you never get that second meeting, then you know you failed miserably in that first meeting.
Well, some great tips, and as you and I both know also in that first meeting, you know, you're just trying to get them to know you and yes, like you. You know, in the end, a large part of that investment is in you and your management, and seasoned investors know, you know, with the greatest plans and your pedigree, so on and so forth, you know, only a few of them really hit. But again, listeners, go to his website. I'm telling you, if you're an entrepreneur, especially one that wants to start a business, you want to go to his events. Go to his website, www.startupriot.com. You'll learn all about his different programs, his Make program, his Join program. And I know February 22nd is going to be your Startup Riot show. Maybe talk just briefly about that, Sanjay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so the 22nd of February is the main event. We've got a career fair event the day before, as well as a hackathon before that. But the main event, we're going to have 30 entrepreneurs get up on stage for 3 minutes. To present 4 slides in front of a large audience. One winner from that will be picked. There will be a judging panel that will pick the top 5 out of the 30, and then the audience will pick the top 3 out of those 5. The top winner will get at least $10,000 in investment in terms of a convertible debt note, and then, as I said, introductions to investors. Right now it's only, I think it's 2 hours worth, so 4 meetings, but we're going to be beefing that up pretty quickly. And hopefully surpassing last year's 8.5 hours worth, 17 meetings worth, soon enough. The one thing that's different about the event, you know, we talked about kind of the price points, is that we screen all the attendees. So we screen out all the service providers. So the lawyers, the accountants, the recruiters, the consultants, anybody that provides services to this community is screened out. So it's only entrepreneurs, investors, corporate folks that buy startups or buy from startups, and then those that support entrepreneurship, so incubators and folks like that. And then, obviously, the sponsors. And some of our sponsors are obviously service providers, but they've been vetted, and they're not ones that are disruptive, let's say. And so, you know, the event ends up being really really a great event because you get to meet the people that you want to meet. And we don't just focus on Atlanta or Georgia startups. We've got people flying in from all over. Last year we had a Australian startup and a European startup present. You know, this year we've got people from Eastern Europe flying in just to attend the event. So they're definitely the people that you want to meet. And, you know, it's an all-day event. We go from about 8:30 in the morning until 5 in the evening, and then we have an after-party that runs from 5 to 7. So it's a day-long plus event, and a lot of fun, at least I think so. I don't know. I end up working for the day, so everybody else tells me it's a lot of fun. You know, I usually, I think, end up enjoying the after party, but that's about it.
Well, I think you also get enjoyment that, and as you said, you founded this in 2008, so it starts to happen, and that is some of them get funded, and eventually one of them is really going to do something big, and you're going to say, you know, my DNA is in there, or whether you have equity or not. But I have to tell you, my hat is off to you. I love entrepreneurs that see needs, fill them, and more importantly, come up with models that actually come back and help entrepreneurs, and you're doing that. Real quickly here, as I mentioned, you have a lot of patents, you know. Know, obviously, technology is important to you. Maybe just talk real quick on how to use technology to really grow a business.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to find the right tool for the right job. So we use a lot of different services from like WooFoo Forms to FreshBooks to kind of manage everything that we do. You know, we're starting to get to the point where we're growing the business that we need to start automating a lot of the things that we do on the back end. A lot of it is just kind of manual processes. And so we're going to start looking to kind of automate some of the things that we do and actually package them in such a way that we can help other people that want to do similar things as us in terms of startup ride and everything. I mean, technology is obviously kind of a key driver for a lot of businesses. I think you have to look at the opportunities out there and see what's available to see, you know, what you can automate. You know, if you can drop down your kind of manual costs, and it's not overly expensive, or it's going to save you a lot of money, and so then it's okay if it's overly expensive. It's obviously the thing to do, and that's the opportunities that we always look for.
Real quickly, you look back on your journey, and you sit here today, and in sitting here today, what do you wish you knew when you started out? You said, God, I wish I knew that.
You know, I wish I'd known to maybe make the jump earlier. You know, my time with the company that I worked for out of college was a good time, and I learned a lot, and it actually prepped me for Digital Envoy. So I don't know if switching that out would have been a good decision, but, I feel like now, man, I'd wish I'd started up Digital Envoy even earlier, or wish I'd started up something else even earlier. A lot of people think about us as entrepreneurs and that are not entrepreneurs and think about the risk that we're taking. Honestly, in anything that you do, there's risk, right? You work for somebody else, there's risk. So don't be afraid of the risk.
Well, I've also learned that the great entrepreneurs eventually take calculated risks. They get much better at this, whether you want to call it science or art. But it's a glorious, glorious life, Sanjay, as you and I both know, and freedom is such an important part of it, and it's nice to do things that really matter and to really help people. And it's funny you were talking about starting sooner. As I mentioned earlier, we have a foundation for kids called the Magic Wand Foundation, and we teach them a lot of mindsets, including seven mindsets, including the time is now and how it's important to get started. Matter of fact, there's a new book out that I highly recommend to everyone called The Seven Mindsets to Live Your Ultimate Life. It's an unexpected blueprint for an extraordinary life. Go out and get the book. Scott Schickler and Jeff Waller are its authors. And I tell you, it's based on some groundbreaking research. And I know you're going to love that book. It's something that's really, really special. Well, I tell you what, Sanjay, I never know where the time goes here. And I'm so glad that we had a chance to hook up here. And hopefully you really enjoyed yourself today.
Yeah, absolutely. And kudos to you for doing what you're doing and talking about all these things. I'm sure it's helping folks out there. So you should feel proud about, you know, doing this each and every week.
Well, I don't do this alone. I've got great people here at WREK that believe in this show and have made this a home for me. And we look forward every week to bringing some of the greatest entrepreneurs on this show. So thanks for joining us, and I look forward to meeting you soon.
Absolutely. Go Jackets.
All right. Again, listeners, go to his website, www.startupriot.com, and go to his event if you're an entrepreneur, if you can get in. But I tell you, he is making a big difference out there. And as I kind of alluded to, it takes a lot of people to make this show and everything we do so successful. I want to thank, of course, everyone at our Ultimate Life Institute, Accent, our Magic Wand Foundation, and, of course, the Let's Talk Business Network. And our epicenter, many of you have heard this, we're building an epicenter for entrepreneurship, which is going to be the home of the Entrepreneur Hall of Fame, which I founded over 10 years ago. But this show is due to the people here at WREK. I want to thank, of course, Jonathan Walker for all of his help. I want to thank Grace and Cody and everyone else. And one thing I can tell you is that each and every week we're going to help you along the way. You're going to learn from the journey of these people. If you ever want some support and help, always feel free to send the email to Mitch at LTBN.com. That's Mitch at LTBN.com.